And welcome to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane. Here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hi.
And this week's guest, Danny. Danny is a Shady Pines radio DJ and does the show Analysis Paralysis. So yeah, I'm super excited to have you on.
Glad to be here.
I like the name of your show. It's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very on theme with us. Very on theme. Real quick, wanted to do a disclaimer. This show is for entertainment purposes only. We work in the field of mental health, but do not claim to be professionals in that field. Our intention is to have conversations around the lived experience. And as a result, we may not always agree with everything our guests say, but we do intend to hold space for conversations and learning from one another. Let's do it. All right. So isolation was something I was thinking about recently. I think something that you had said earlier before we had started was kind of in reference to like the idea that fears become our limits, right? And I feel like that's where I start isolating as I create this fear of the outside world. And then that's my limit becomes my front door. Has anybody else had like similar experiences with that?
I feel like during the pandemic, I started to get real, like, it was hard to leave the house. And, like, every time I did leave the house, I'd get, like, way more anxiety than I normally did. And, yeah, it was almost like being, even though I was miserable being alone all the time, I also, like, didn't know how to be around people anymore. So that was my experience recently with isolation. What about you?
Well, I'm only smiling because I think that everybody forgot how to people for a bit there.
Yeah.
When we came back out into the world, there was a lot of awkward bumbling into... How do I socially interact with anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My isolation is usually mental health driven. So when I'm in pain, I isolate mostly to keep other people from having to feel anything about my feelings. And then I'm worried about them. I'm managing them and I'm not able to take care of myself. But I've also learned that isolation feeds the negative mental health traps that I find myself in. And so I have to force myself out exactly when I don't want to interact with the outside world.
Definitely.
That's a conundrum.
I think something that Zoe's brought up like a lot of times was just like the idea that like the things that we're anxious about, like we start reinforcing the anxiety about them by staying away from them for longer. So I can kind of see how that would connect to your idea.
Yeah. No, it does kind of suck once you realize that like, oh, the stuff I'm scared of is the stuff I have to do to get over how scared I am. And you're like, cool, that's fun. But then once you do it a couple times, you start to realize that you're pretty much always making it worse in your head than it's going to be, or regularly, you know, that our minds make it worse. So,
worrying about things ahead of time means I get to suffer through them twice.
Yeah.
Not only when I worry about it, but also when it's happening.
That's
when
a good
I
point.
Get there.
Yeah. Might as well just suffer once when it's happening.
Yeah.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I had to ask my roommate, Taylor, who's not here today. But I had to ask him. Like, we were just kind of like sitting at the house, and like I walk out of my bedroom, which I spend a lot of time in apparently. And I was just like, hey, do I spend a lot of time alone? And he's like, yes. And I was like, okay, maybe we don't need to answer so quickly. It's fine. But like, yeah, it's hard to like even gauge like what's too much alone time.
Yeah.
Well, you're supposed to take time for yourself. You're supposed to have me time. But if your Google Calendar looks like mine, it's like a rainbow threw up in there. And
delicious.
Between being a single mom, working, any kind of a social life, any kind of a dating life, and then trying to find time that's me time. But I'm the kind of person that if I'm sitting not doing anything, I have been driven my entire life by this capitalism, beautiful capitalism society that tells me that if I'm not being productive, I have no worth, I have no use. And so isolation can look like taking care of all the things that I need to take care of, but the not enoughness there. If I'm alone and I don't have feedback from someone else, I don't necessarily know if I've done enough.
Yeah.
And that goes into spending enough time alone or enough time outside of the room. I think that not enoughness is just very prevalent.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the progress is hard to see as the person who's experiencing it, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, there's so many times that, like, I'll be in a familiar situation and I'll be handling it not as well as I want to. And somebody has to point out, like, you're handling this better than you did 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy shit, you're right. You know, like, I have to make that acknowledgement of, like, growth is happening. And, like, I don't know, just the importance of, like, community and just, like, people around you. Like, we need that feedback. Like, I spent so much time thinking that, like, you know, all I have to do is go on this self-help journey where I just isolate and I fucking read more books. And once I have all the information, then I can go out into the world. And it's just like, I use self-help as a reason to isolate. I said, once I have enough information, then I'm worthy of being a part of the world. Then I'm worthy of community and love and support once I'm totally healed. But until then, I need to isolate myself. And like you were saying, you know, like, I don't want my emotions to be other people's emotions.
Mm-hmm. But then you're not practicing being around people and it gets harder.
It does. Yeah. It has been.
Yeah. The pandemic definitely made me realize how much like Well, and when I was younger, I was like one of those people that I think I was like a true extrovert when I was younger. And it might have just been like trauma induced, but that like I needed outside validation to feel like comfortable. Not validation, but like interaction. I didn't really know how to like make decisions on my own. And like, I don't know, I was just really social. And like now that I've gotten older, I think I'm like both. I think I'm an extroverted introvert because I get recharged from being around people, and I also get recharged from being alone. And I think it's just, yeah, finding that balance. And I do feel constantly like kind of going back and forth, trying to figure out like what the right amount of alone time is and what, but I definitely know, I don't know about you all, but I've definitely gotten better at being alone as I've gotten older, and I've gotten more comfortable being alone as I've gotten older. I don't know. Is that similar?
I'm definitely more comfortable being alone, but it took me a very long time to find my limit of how extroverted I can be for how long before I need that alone time.
Totally.
And I found it when my partner moved in with me, because all of a sudden there was never a night that he wasn't in the house with me. And all of a sudden I started to treasure those hours where the house was quiet. Mm-hmm. And I spent my entire life with a big family, big friend groups, and then big houses that were big community spaces. There was always someone around. And so even if I wasn't interacting with them, I could hear them somewhere nearby. There was a comfort in that.
Totally.
Isolation used to look like just not interacting, but being close enough to people that I had the option to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Isolation now looks like having my own quiet space, being able to shut the door, maybe lock it, and just take off every single mask that I've been wearing all day long and just be.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that is the biggest sigh of, I'm not sure if isolation has a negative connotation for you, but when I think of isolating, I do think of it as more of a negative choice. And I think that it's completely healthy and normal to isolate from everything else to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yes.
And yet I've almost never looked at it as self-care or me time.
Yeah.
I hear that word.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. Because in mental health, like working in the field of mental health, like we say it like it's a negative thing. Like, oh, they're dealing with isolation, or they're isolating. Yeah. And of course, like to a certain extent, when it's too much isolation, it does cause problems. But you're right. I think acknowledging that like there's a lot of self-care that's involved in isolation.
Well, and I like what you said in regards to being able to take off all those masks. Because like for me, I need somewhere where I can be as sad as I want to be, where I can be as mad as I want to be, where I can be happy and not worry about somebody be like, you're too happy. You know what I mean? It's just like, it feels like, for me, it's like, it's a safety and a comfort of like, you know, I don't have to show up for the rest of the world. I don't have to find all the fucking perfect words. I don't have to, you know, manage all these things. It's just like right here, I can be as messy and as imperfect as I want to be for, I'd say as long as I want to be, but I haven't hit a limit on that. And that's the part that I guess I'm trying to work through is, you know, it's like, what's the difference between alone time and isolation? You know, alone time is something that might help you recharge, but isolation might be something that's draining.
Maybe that's the difference, right? Is like isolation is when you're like actively avoiding maybe like the desire to be around, or like you have that tension of like, I know I should be, or I feel like it would be good for me, but I don't want to. And then maybe like alone time is like when you're like, no, I am choosing to be alone. Like,
because
this is what I need right now.
Yeah. It's like you said about the choice. Like it's more of a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that a lot of times isolation can feel imposed.
Sure.
It's imposed on you, even if it's from yourself. It's something that's kind of forced upon you.
Yeah.
Versus the choice to be alone. I don't consider that. I don't tell people I'm isolating.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Semantics.
Yeah. No, I was going to say the language is powerful there,
but
right?
It's very powerful. It's very powerful because it's like, I think if I can frame the times that like I might consider myself isolating in a better way of like, I just need this alone time, because it's like, I feel like alone time is the thing that allows you to charge your battery so that way you can go be social. You know, like isolation is like, I need to be alone because this is what I control and I never want to go out. Like, I don't want to go out there, you know, or like, I'm not allowed to go out there. I don't want to go out there. Like whatever the case may be, it's like, you know, it's accepting that that's the way things are, but still having a desire to be a part of it.
Yeah. It has like a negative connotation. I feel like isolation does, just that word in general, and at least in our culture is we think of it like, oh, they're isolating. That's a bad thing.
What was your experience with like COVID? Cause I mean, I feel like that's when we all universally kind of got that isolation experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And we still get to when we get COVID again and again.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
So I recently had COVID and I had to isolate for 2 weeks because I was testing positive and sick for almost 2 weeks. Mm. And my son was at his father's house, which was very different from quarantine COVID isolation, where my son was with me all the time.
Yeah.
And I love my son dearly. He was headed into kindergarten when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And so we spent most of our days, I made sure that we went outside every single day because I thought that it was important to get a little bit of sunlight on our skin and just get some fresh air because we're at home all the time now. And we made friends, because we're both extroverts, with the neighbors in the neighborhood where we could all be in our yards but yell things across the street at each other as far as needed. The gardening that we were doing.
But I think that speaks to the importance of like us trying to get out there. You know, it's just like, what is the form of connection that I can get that's going to satisfy this like literally like a human need?
I do not isolate well.
You don't isolate well?
I don't. I am one of those extroverts that gets my batteries charged. But not only that, I make friends on the way to the bathroom with strangers everywhere that I go. I cannot help it. I see things in people and I want to let them know, hey, I love what I see you doing, or I love the way that you worded that. And I don't know how to keep those thoughts to myself. I don't have an inside voice.
For all the people who have an inside voice that says awful things, I'm glad that yours is just like, I really like the stuff you're working on. You know what I mean? Like, that is not the worst intrusive thought ever.
But you're not saying you don't have an internal dialogue, are you?
Oh, no, I have many internal dialogues running all the time.
Some people don't. I just found this out recently. I feel like we might have talked about
it. I also just found this out. There are people,
and it's normal,
that wake up and they have no thoughts until they choose to think about something. What is that?
Yeah, I heard they think in like images, and I'm like, I don't like, and it's not like a weird, like it's not like a neurodivergent or anything. It's just a, like, it's a normal thing that brains do, and we just never, nobody ever talked about it, like, or that it's a common thing that brains do, I guess is a better way of saying it. So yeah, I was blown away by that.
Well,
when you said that for a second, I was like, oh my gosh, is she one of them? I was like, I have to ask more questions.
No, I have bubbling thoughts that I feel like sharing with the world. And I do have plenty of thoughts that I don't share with the world because I don't want people to know how weird I am.
Yeah.
Sure. I think that being able to tell the difference between like, hey, this will help me connect and this will make me feel more disconnected is kind of like a good line to draw.
Yeah, I know.
I guess with isolation, when you feel like when you're getting there, like how do you recognize that you're isolating instead of just having alone time?
I'm sober. I'm 6.5 years sober now. And I would say that some of the biggest times of isolation in my life have been when I was unhealthy enough that I didn't want to affect anybody around me with my issues that were plaguing me. And so when I recognize that I'm isolating, that's usually a really good sign that there is something that I need outside help with. Mm. And my isolation looked like the end of my drinking days. My isolation looked like trying to figure out the right medication combo that would make me fit for the world around me and know the difference between those things that are going to make me connected and feel more disconnected.
Yep.
And so if I'm isolating, it's actually a really good sign for me to check in and figure out what's going on because it's not in my nature. And I think that for someone like you, from what I'm hearing you share, isolating is a comfortable place. And for me, isolating is more of a place where I go so that nobody else is bothered by what's happening to me. But I don't think that there's any healing in being alone. I think that I need community to heal.
Yeah.
I think that I agree with you in that needing the community part of it and recognizing it. I think that like the isolation for me isn't comfortable. It's like, it's just the fear that something else might be more uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this isn't as safe as I can be. This isn't as good as I could be feeling. Because like, I think the thing that we were talking about earlier with isolation is just like, it's the desire to be a part of something, you know, like it doesn't feel like alone time at this point. At this point, it's just like, I want to be a part of things. And like, it feels like I can't, that door, all the scary stuff's on the other side of it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense to me. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it is tricky to find a balance. I feel like and figuring out like what you're getting from it too, because I think sometimes I get that like back and forth feeling of or like FOMO. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where I have these days where I'm like I was talking to my boyfriend on the phone the other day, and he was like, I should go to this open mic because I like have to hang with my friend tomorrow after work, and I have this contest, and I want to practice, and I know if I don't do it today, I'm gonna regret not doing it, and he's like, will you feel better tomorrow? And I'm like, we had this whole conversation, and he's like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, I want to stay home, but I logically know that going out will make me feel better. Yeah, so it's just like this kind of back and forth of like which thing is going to, you know, and then that whole like instant gratification versus delayed gratification comes up, right? Because in that moment, sitting on the couch, but I also kind of knew that like tomorrow I'm going to feel lame that I did that. So
yeah,
how do you like decide based on maybe like the next 48 hours, like what the best decision is, you know? Yeah. That was kind of what I was dealing with.
I have a completely different experience there where I get FOMO all the time because part of my show is telling everybody about events happening around town, which unfortunately means I know all of the things that I'm missing if I pick one thing.
Yeah.
I also have various friend groups and communities that I'm actively involved in. And because I'm a mom, there are nights that I just have to be home with my child whose bedtime is at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
And if we're not in bed by 8, we have big feelings about it. So for me, FOMO is a constant thing. And when I stay in, I've had to practice telling myself that I'm doing it to care for myself.
Yeah, totally.
As opposed to, so I do things for future Danny quite a lot, like the dishes.
Yeah.
I don't do those for right now, Danny. No. I do those for tomorrow morning, Danny.
Same. Yeah. It's become a big thing for me doing the dishes before I go to bed. I was just talking about this earlier.
I came home to a clean bedroom the other day and I was like, why don't I clean my fucking room? Like, because everything else went wrong that day. But when I came home to a clean bedroom, I was like, fuck it. This is all I need. It's like my Afro being on point. You know, everything can fall apart as long as this is on point.
I'm going to isolate now. My hair's going to look good while I'm doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I look great for being alone right now. We're going to take a real quick break and we will be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hi.
And Danny. On this last section, we wanted to talk about loss. I think that loss can look like a lot of different things, but I think that each person's experience with loss is very personal. And I'm curious about what your experience with loss has been.
So I've recently had a pretty impactful loss, actually. And I was talking with my son on the way here today. I was telling him that one of the things that we might discuss is loss. And he asked me, loss of a person, loss of maybe a toy that a you pet. Cared about, a pet, maybe losing a friendship, a relationship that you really care about. Yeah. And the loss that we've recently gone through is that I was pregnant. I found out close to Mother's Day that I was pregnant. And within a few days, I found out that it was an ectopic pregnancy. So we knew that I was going to lose it basically from the beginning of finding out about the pregnancy. And thank you. I didn't know much about ectopic pregnancies before this. I didn't know much about miscarriage at all before this.
Sure.
Because it's not something that's discussed. It's something that's actively encouraged for people to hold on to keep everybody around them from being uncomfortable. And the way that I live my life, which is very out loud, was to share about my experience and to lean on my community for that support during this time. So the pregnancy itself lasted for almost 2.5 months. Okay. Ectopic pregnancies are pregnancies that form outside of the uterus. And so if left to grow, it can be fatal for the person carrying it. Sure. And we live in a state where I was able to get medical care. I was able to seek treatment, have support from professionals, as well as reaching out to my community and sharing what I was going through. I found out from a lot of women in my life that they had gone through this exact same kind of loss. And it is amazing to me that they had never had a place before now. They had never had a person before me to share that with, because except for maybe their intimate partner, perhaps their family, they were encouraged to just keep that to themselves. And I think most people are. Pregnancies are not celebrated until after 3 months, because if you're going to lose one, it's going to be in that first 12 weeks. And the loss of a pregnancy, I read somewhere, it's the loss of 1,000 what ifs. It wasn't losing a child.
Wow.
It was losing the possible future of having a child. And there are so many possibilities.
Yeah. Well, that must have been really hard too, because, you know, I believe you said is that you'd found out that you were pregnant, and then you'd found out that it was like from the start that you were going to lose this. What was it like, I guess, having like make that preparation of like, you know, this is an inevitable loss?
I want to start this by saying that I think that abortion is every single person's right. I agree with it wholeheartedly. And I want every single person has the right to an abortion. Mm-hmm. I struggle with the idea of getting an abortion for myself because I was able to feel a life inside of me. Yeah. And I had to make a medical decision to end that life in order to make sure that I did not get sick or have any complications. And knowing that that was coming was bittersweet, only because there's so many things in life that you don't know that you're going to lose before they're gone.
Wow. Mm.
There are so many times that I've lost something in life where I look back and I try to remember the last time that it felt good. If it's a relationship, I try to remember the last time that I had my hands on whatever treasured object it is that I'm looking for. Yeah. And this was knowing that I was losing something. So I was able to embrace the fact that it happened at all. I was able to lean into my partner. I was able to prepare for the loss in a way that I think people do when they know that the death of a loved one is coming.
Yeah.
And I was able to walk through that with my son and my partner and my family and all of my friends, aware of what was happening with me, to hold me on my hardest days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I feel like that's really important too, is just is leaning on other people, because it's like that's
Yeah.
I don't know. Loss is such a hard thing to experience by yourself, and especially like something like just as personal as that, you know, like having a life inside of you and just from the start, just like knowing how it's likely going to end. My mom, before she had me, had a daughter who was born with like a condition where it was like, I guess, similar in a way of just like they were like, hey, this child is not going to survive this. So this is a matter of when you decide that like you have to turn off the machine. And just understate, like, just my mom always told me, she's like, no parent should ever have to experience the loss of a child, you know, like children experience loss of parents, you know, because they're older, like it's to be expected. But like in the other way around, there's no way to like really prepare for that, I imagine.
Yeah, there's not. I don't think that there is any way to prepare for it. I reached out to different groups. There's, you know, places that you can go to get support. Hearing other people's perspectives, hearing what they went through was really the most helpful.
Yeah.
Good.
I had someone share with me that there is no death more intimate than the one that passes through you.
Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's... Wow.
And there were things like that, that on my darkest days made me feel like someone else somewhere else has sat where I'm sitting, has been feeling the way that I'm feeling right now. And I have survived 100% of my hardest days to get here right now. I know that I'm going to survive things even when they're hard because I have survived everything up until now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Well, and I think like even just having those other perspectives, because it's like, I feel like we gain perspectives through our own experiences and those are things that we can share with other people. But like that goes both ways. Like there's people who have had either, you know, similar experiences or even different in a way, but still relatable, where it's just like they can offer you those words that like somebody like me, I could never offer you because I haven't had that experience in any capacity, mm-hmm. you know, so to be able to reach out to community and be able to process your loss with the people who have also either are processing, have processed, or about to need to process. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, something you said that's not necessarily specifically about that, but about loss in general that I feel like came up for me recently was like something how we do this thing where we like, or at least I've caught myself doing it before. I think it's somewhat common where we're like, you know, say when someone dies and you're like, did you know that, like, were they sick or was it like out of the blue? Right. And then somehow we're like, well, if you knew, then like kind of what you said, where like there was time to prepare, you know, and like, but I said that to somebody recently and they gave me the feedback of like, it doesn't really make a difference. Like, it's really hard to lose someone no matter what. And that like, and then I was like, oh, that's that whole like meaning making thing that we like to do where we're like, oh, well, somehow the loss is going to feel less impactful because you knew it was going to happen. Like, you know, and it's like, but also watching someone, like, obviously not the same as your, but if someone was sick that you love, that, you know, watching someone get really sick and die can be really traumatic as well, or for them as well too, you know? And so it's kind of like this weird thing where we want to be like, oh, how can I make this feel better? Kind of your thing about like needing to isolate for not have to manage other people's emotions. Cause we do without even realizing it. We're kind of like, oh, how can I make this feel less bad for you so I can feel less weird about the thing you shared? Even though we may be comfortable talking about it, it's just this thing we've been taught to do, kind of like to be like, oh, maybe it wasn't as bad, or I'm glad it happened this way, you know? And then I realized that maybe that's not a helpful thing to do for people that are dealing with loss. But I definitely did it in a moment and learned my lesson. Like, oh, that wasn't
what
I needed to hear.
There's always levels to things, but you can drown in 2 feet of water just like you can 20.
Right.
And so loss, whether or not it seems as impactful, whether or not it seems like as big of a deal, I can tell you that if I have all these things stacked up against me, losing my keys can be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I will burst into tears and have a full on panic attack because I've lost something where I just had it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening. I just need to get on with my day. Mm-hmm. And I can say that the big losses, the ones that are supposed to devastate you, it is okay to be okay through those things. And that was the biggest thing that happened with this loss, was that I wasn't perpetually depressed. I wasn't sitting in grief in a way that was uncomfortable because I was comfortable flowing in and out of, this is a real thing. This is something that I'm enduring. This is happening to me. And I'm still alive. My son is still alive. I still have a family and a group of people that I want to interact with. And so holding space for the fact that it was okay to fall apart and it was okay to be okay during loss was something that nobody prepared me for.
Yeah.
Because so often you see someone grieving. Let's say someone has lost a family member. Let's say a child is grieving over a pet that they've lost.
Yeah.
We expect them to be sad until they're not. And then they're not sad anymore. they've reached that magical turning point. Yeah. And now everything is okay.
I did
okay.
my sad subscription. Yeah. I'm all paid up.
That's a big misunderstanding about grief is that, well, and that's something I learned too, is like this whole idea of the stages of grief. It's like they don't happen sequentially and there isn't an end point. It's like we just move through, and not that they're all under, there's different interpretations of stages of grief too.
Right.
But like we kind of just move throughout them, and that grief is like often like the rest of our life process where we, you know, obviously it might like decrease in severity or sadness or whatever, but you're not necessarily, there's not necessarily an end point to being sad over the loss of someone. You might go like I had a friend who died at, like, when I was 18, and it's just part of my, like, I mean, it's changed, but it's still part of my story. It's still part of every year when his birthday comes around, you know, every time, you know, all that, like, so yeah, I think that's a really good point that, like, we have the misconceptions about what grief or loss or sadness looks like.
Yeah, well, and I can relate with that. I guess, like, the idea of, like, feeling bad for feeling good, you know, because it's like, I feel like that's a very, very common thing of just, like, this really hard thing happened. I should feel bad. And, you know, that this really bad thing happened. And it's just like, I almost feel like I'm not allowed to ever feel happiness ever again because this really bad thing happened. And it's like being able to understand that, like, you know, whoever we lost, whatever's been lost, like, wouldn't want us to just continually be sad without it. You know, like, I think whoever we lost or whatever we've lost would want us to, you know, I think you'd said it earlier, just enjoy having experienced it, you know, having even crossed paths, having even, you know, but yeah, I like what you say about meaning making, because I've realized that a lot of people try to, like, sum things up to, like, well, it made you tougher, made you. And it's just like, motherfucker, I don't want to be tough.
Yeah.
So fucking sick of being tough.
I don't want to have to be strong through things. I want to just live a life of ease and comfort. And I don't think there's anything wrong with not wanting to be strong through it. I really liked what you said. I think that gratitude for loss is something that also isn't taught.
Yeah.
I think that container for grief gets larger as time goes on.
Yeah.
And I think it gives you the perspective and enough distance from the emotions that initially are reactions, where you can look at something and you can be grateful for the time that you had with someone.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that loss is, we often associate it with people, with things, with attachments that we have.
Yeah.
One of the other areas of loss that I've had recently is with my health. I've lost my able-bodiedness in a way that I've had it my entire life.
Yeah.
And I haven't met many people who talk through these things, but loss of hearing, loss of eyesight, loss of autonomy, loss of any of these physical things, it's a very internal journey. And I've had to face my internalized ableism. I've had to face all these things that I used to think of myself as and that I used to be able to do.
Yeah.
Because of a loss where it's nobody's fault and it's not something that I have any control over. Yeah. So that's similar to any other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think even like what you said, where it's like you don't have any like control over it. And, you know, it's like those are contributing factors that like make even processing loss like a different experience, you know, where it's just like, OK, I just have like I don't have any control over that. This is just my body. Like, it's not my fault. It's not like I tried to jump over a fucking fire truck and failed. You know, I don't know why that's an example, but like, you know, this isn't something I did to myself, you know, but like this is still happening and just having to like come to terms with that. I think it's extremely important because it's like there are going to be a number of things that are out of our control. There are going to be things that we lose because we lost them for ourselves.
Yeah. And sometimes it's a good thing. That made me think about like loss of identity, right? Like like one aspect of your identity. Like I feel like I've gone through phases like that where I was like, I used to be like the fit girl that lost 100 pounds. And then I like decided that was really unhealthy. And then I had to like figure out who I was because that was like so much of my identity. Yeah. And there was a big loss around it. I had to fill that part of my life with something else. It's way cooler now, I'll tell you that much. Dieting's not that fun, but neither is exercising for some people, but but yeah, no, I like the way like that there isn't just loss around, like loss doesn't always mean death. It can be like a loss of an identity. It can be a loss of whatever. Yeah. But yeah, but I think specifically becoming disabled too, like I think is a really big one that we don't talk about enough in our culture.
Yeah.
And that we're all going to be disabled one day in some form or another, because as we age, we become disabled. And I think that's a really important conversation that we should be having more.
Definitely.
And maybe the idea that like our who we are will change throughout our life and that we don't have control over that, because I think we're told we have control over those things. And then when we realize we don't, then it's like this huge loss. And if we would have just said from the beginning, like, shit gonna happen and you're gonna change.
This was never mine.
Yeah, none of this is promised. Yeah, and I feel like that might be a better way to talk about stuff, but we just don't do that in our culture. So, yeah. But yeah, I think that's a good point that you brought up. Yeah.
And loss can have kind of a negative connotation, similar to what we were discussing before, but there's also things that you want to lose, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Loss of ideals that I was raised with, loss of the identities that no longer serve me, loss of my trauma responses. Like these are things that I sometimes actively pick up and set down, but sometimes they're things that just take time. And it's not something that we always get to choose when it happens, how it happens. Sometimes you look around and you've lost something that followed you for years before now. And that's something to be celebrated in some ways, but it's not always a conscious decision. It's not always an action that I take. When I lose things, sometimes I'm losing them for the good.
Yeah.
And it's being replaced with other things, like you said.
Yeah. Absolutely. Totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Danny, thank you so much for sharing your perspective, sharing your time. It's been a pleasure having you, and I really enjoyed this conversation. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. This is great.
Excellent. All right. Well, that has been the Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane. Here is Zoe Schwartz.
Me.
And Danny. Play to play us.